Good to be back with you this evening. We're going to spend a few minutes tonight talking about a subject. I'm not sure what to say about the subject. Well, I guess you'll find out what I have to say about it. But as far as an introductory, it's quite a subject, and it's. I guess it's not something that we want to think about, but it's very necessary to think about it. I think it'll be helpful to think about it. And while this lesson may not have anything that you don't know already in it, I think that it will serve a purpose for us and will be helpful to us in the coming week in the decisions that we make, whether for God or for selfishness. We're going to talk about hell this evening. And I've titled this lesson, A Biblical Look at Hell, because that's simply what I want to do. As far as hell is concerned, and even heaven at that, both of these eternal destinations have a lot of different ideas and lots of different fantasies about what heaven is like, what hell is like. There's a lot of different things that people say about heaven, and a lot of things people say about hell, and a lot of those things can't be found in the scriptures. And in fact, there's the scriptures are don't give us a lot of detail on heaven or hell. So we are left with what the Bible does provide us with, and we really need to leave it at that. That's what I would encourage you and I to do when we look at these scriptures on hell, to only look at what is there and leave it at that and move on from there. So to begin, I would like to look at some Greek words of the New Testament. We're going to look at three words. And they are Hades, Tartarus, and Gehenna. And the reason why we're looking at these three words from the Greek language is because they're all found in the Greek New Testament, and they have all been translated, maybe not in every English translation, but in some translations, they have all been translated hell into English. So it's necessary for us to look at them. Are they all properly defined as hell? I don't believe so. Nonetheless, I think especially with the old King James Version, all three of these terms, Hades, Tartarus, and Gehenna, are translated into one English word, hell. Now, some of the newer translations have taken various variations away from the King James. So it may not be so with the translation that you prefer to read out of. It may not be so. Nonetheless, we need to look at all of these because in some English translations, they are all translated hell. So let's look at this word Hades at first. Hades, by definition, you look it up in Strong's definitions, Thayer, it's very consistent. And it's pretty well known as well for even the non-Greek speaker like myself. Hades, by definition, means the unseen or the place of departed souls. It is an unseen place, and it's that is to our eyes anyway. And it's been called a place in which souls that leave this earth, that's where they go. And if you notice in one of the situations in which it is used, like in Acts chapter 2 and verse 31, where Peter is preaching there on the day of Pentecost, he spoke of the psalmist and how he had foresaw the resurrection of Christ. He said that he spoke concerning the resurrection of Christ, that his soul was not left in Hades, nor did his flesh see corruption. Now again, some of the more older translations, instead of using this word Hades, will use the word hell, that his soul was not left in hell. You'll see that like in the Old King James Version. I don't Don't think that that is accurate to call the Greek word Hades to say that it's synonymous with the word hell. Hell is an eternal destination. It is an eternal place that comes after the great day of judgment. While Hades, as we can see, is a place that even Jesus went to. Now, Jesus didn't go to hell, no one yet has gone to hell. But rather, he did go, according to the Greek word, he did go to Hades, as it's defined as the unseen or the place of departed souls. And that is consistent with the Old Testament text, the concept of Sheol in the Old Testament, in the Hebrew. These ideas of the grave, Hades carries these ideas of Sheol and the grave. It is the place of which one departs from this life, but it is not a place in which one would attain heaven or go to hell. That is going to have to come later on. So we leave this concept of Hades. I would hope that we're all in agreement that it doesn't really play a part in our main discussion this evening on hell. Following that, we need to talk a little bit about the word Tartarus. Now, according to Thayer's Greek to English Lexicon of New Testament Words, he defines Tartarus as regarded by the ancient Greeks as the abode of the wicked dead, where they suffer punishment for their evil deeds. And Thayer adds that it answers to the Gehenna of the Jews. Now, we haven't talked about Gehenna just yet. And I'm not sure if he's right about that. If you notice here, generally, Thayer defines a word in the Greek. He gives the definition. And then there are times like this where, and I wish he wouldn't do it, but he kind of gives a little spin on it, you know, kind of gives his idea about it. Nonetheless, we kind of get an idea. It's definitely a place of the departed. It's the place of dead, but it's considered in for the ancient Greeks, it was considered a place for just the wicked dead. Now, whether this is identical to hell is probably not the case. Now, where is Tartarus in the New Testament? One place. And that place is over in 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 4. And there it is said, "For if God did not spare the angels who sinned, but cast them down to hell and deliver them into chains of darkness to be reserved for judgment," and then obviously the text continues on there. You can read the context for yourself. But I'm going to be moving along pretty quickly here through this lesson. And so just looking at this statement and how the word hell is used in this verse 4 of 2 Peter 2, here it is, that God had cast down the angels who sinned, he cast them down to hell and delivered them into chains of darkness, and that they are now awaiting judgment. They're awaiting a judgment. Well, this word here that's translated into English, hell, here in 2 Peter 2:4, is the Greek word Tartarus. It is not the same as Gehenna, and I find it interesting that Peter does not use the word Gehenna, because we're about to talk about Gehenna. And that is the word that is used all throughout the New Testament text that's translated hell, and I think properly and rightly so. However, on this one occasion, Peter does not use the term Gehenna. Peter uses the term Tartarus. And it is translated into the majority of the English translations as hell, but I'm not so sure it ought to be translated as hell. If you look at the context, he's talking about how God has cast down these angels who sinned to this place of Tartarus, and they are in chains of darkness to be reserved for judgment. It seems to suggest the idea that they are in a location that is not their eternal location, their everlasting location, but they are awaiting judgment. And we're going to see a text here soon that's going to talk about hell, and it's going to talk about how God has prepared and created the place of hell, originally created for a place for the devil and his angels. But if you notice here, this place of Tartarus, as Peter uses it, this is a place where the angels are there, and it seems to suggest that they are waiting the day of judgment, which seems to suggest also that they're going to be judged, and then they're going to be placed in a different abode, hell, that which was prepared for the devil and his angels. So, some might disagree, I'm not sure, but I guess it doesn't matter all too much, but this is the one and only place that this particular word is used in the New Testament, and I think we could probably all confirm that it's more or less unconfirmed whether this is actually talking about hell or not. So, leaving aside the word Hades and leaving aside the word Tartarus, we get to Gehenna, and this is the spot we need to be, I think, in our discussion of hell. Gehenna has a rich history in the Bible. In the Old Testament, Gehenna was called the Valley of Hinnom, or it was sometimes called the Valley of the Sons of Hinnom. And this was a location just outside, a valley just outside of the city of Jerusalem. And so knowing the rich history of Jerusalem in the Old Testament and certainly in the New Testament, this valley just outside, I think we can infer that there's going to be some history to it as well. And there certainly is. There are a number of times throughout the Old Testament where Gehenna, or that is the Valley of Hinnom, is referred to. And if you note, one of those places is in Jeremiah 7, verse 31. And you can cross-reference this and look at other places, or just pick up a concordance when you're at home. This is more or less a lesson of an overview than anything else. So pick up a concordance and look up Hinnom and look at other places in which it is used in the Old Testament. I think that'll be a profitable exercise. Nevertheless, if you look there in Jeremiah 7, verse 31, it talks about the wicked of Judah and how they had built up the high places of Tophet, which is in the valley of the sons of Hinnom, to burn their sons and their daughters in the fire, which I did not command, nor did it come into my heart, God says. And so he's describing the wicked conditions of the people of God in Jeremiah's time. And what they had done is outside of Jerusalem, in this particular valley, which is called the Valley of the Sons of Hinnom, they had set up idol worship, and they were worshiping false gods there, and they were sacrificing their children on the altars here in this valley. So it was a tremendous place of grotesque sin, as it's known through the Old Testament, this Valley of Hinnom. When we get to the New Testament, the Jews no longer used it as a place of burning bodies. They no longer used it as a place of idol worship. Nevertheless, it was still a grotesque place. No one wanted to have anything to do with the Valley of Hinnom anymore. And so what it became, even in the New Testament times, is it essentially became a trash heap. It was a trash pile. It was basically a Jerusalem city dump. And they would dump their trash there, and they would burn the trash. That's how they, you know, got rid of their trash, is by burning it. And supposedly, they had a constant fire going. Yeah, it's a big city and a lot of trash. And so as far as history accounts, there was always a fire burning in the Valley of Hinnom, or as the Greek word for it, Gehenna, there is trash being burnt. So it's a place of desolation. It's a place of fire. That's the idea. But notice how Jesus uses the term. Jesus is the first one to use this idea, this term Gehenna, to describe a spiritual and eternal realm. In Luke chapter 12, in verse 5, Luke had just got done talking about the idea of don't fear man who can kill the body, and after that, there's nothing more which they can do. But in Luke 12:5, he says, "But I will show you whom you should fear. Fear him who, after he has killed, has power to cast into hell. Yes, I say to you, fear him." Now, this word translated into the English as hell is that Greek word Gehenna. That idea carries a lot of pictures in the head of the first century people when Jesus used that term. When Jesus spoke of God saying, fear the God whom after you are killed, after you are dead, he has the power to cast you into Gehenna. You see how he's using that term now, and forevermore, that word is going to be used all throughout the New Testament as a term of hell, what we know as hell in English. A place of fire, a place of desolation, a place where evil was, a place where evil started this valley. And so Jesus is using that term, and it's very interesting as he uses that term when that was a literal place just outside of Jerusalem in those days. And everyone in which he was talking to has seen it, has known about it, knew about its past, knew about what used to happen in that valley, and they smell those fires, and they smell the smoke in their nostrils. And Jesus uses that term, speaking of something that is very obvious from the context. He's not talking about that trash dump. He's not talking about God, killing the soul in a trash dump. So he's using this word as illustrative of a place to come, a realm that is not of this realm. We'll talk more about how it is a spiritual place later on in the lesson. So as we continue, we need to look at some of the pictures that the Bible paints of hell. And before we do that, I want to stop and say there are a number of pictures that are very commonly thought of as hell that I don't believe are. I cannot in good conscience say that these are illustrations in the Bible of hell. Now, some of you might very well disagree with me. I would have disagreed with me, several years ago, so that's fine. Nevertheless, what I'm simply saying is that these things I cannot in good conscience try to stand up here and explain to be hell. All of them are found in the book of Revelation, which that should send up a flag in our minds. Revelation starts as saying that it is a signified book, meaning these are signs and symbols. These are figurative ideas proclaiming some sort of spiritual truth. Revelation also begins as saying that these are things that Christ is showing his servants of things which must shortly take place. And all throughout the book, the ideas of things are, these things are coming quickly is used. The word quickly is used, or these things are at hand, or the time is at hand. And then the book wraps up with the final chapter to say once again, these things, Christ has shown his servants, the things which must shortly take place. So I think that those facts alone about the book of Revelation means that Revelation's figurative usage of things that look a lot like hell cannot enter into our discussion of this eternal place. So statements in Revelation like the bottomless pit in Revelation 23. Some might say, you know, right quick without looking at the context, oh, that sounds like a hell. Or statements like being tormented with fire and brimstone in Revelation 14:10. Or the lake of fire and brimstone in Revelation 20:10. Fire and brimstone has an interesting history, as it's a figure, it's a symbolic concept throughout the Bible. It started with Sodom and Gomorrah, a localized geographical judgment of God upon a wicked nation and a wicked city, a wicked people. And throughout the Old and New Testament, the idea of fire and brimstone is used in reference to localized geographical judgments of God against a wicked city or nation. It's used against Jerusalem. It's used against the idea of parts of the Roman Empire, as can be seen in Revelation 14. Revelation 20 is the context. First century things. Things that have to do with Jerusalem. Things that have to do with parts of the Roman Empire. God's localized geographical judgments against wickedness, just like He did back with Sodom and Gomorrah in the book of Genesis. This kind of terminology is used. These are figures in the book of Revelation, or concepts like the second death. A lot of people think, well, the second death, that's all over the Bible, but it's only in the book of Revelation. It's used nowhere else. And the second death, some have suggested that the first death is our physical death. The second death would be hell. But rather, in the context of Revelation, the only reason why Revelation uses the term a second death is because it had already was already in the context talking about another death. And so to differentiate in our minds one of the death from another, and I think the figure of death is that something is coming to an end or something has ended. The book of Revelation is differentiating between, in the same chapter, one thing that has ended from another thing that was going to end soon after. So, like I said, a lot of people think, even some of our brethren, you will still hold that some of these things would be in reference to hell. But we're not going to be talking about those things, not in my conscience anyway. And maybe in another occasion we might talk some about Revelation if you all are interested. Nevertheless, what does the Bible speak of as far as illustrative terms, pictures, ideas about what hell is? Well, just because Revelation uses the idea of fire and brimstone and the lake of fire and brimstone does not mean that other places in the Bible do not refer to hell as a place of fire, because it certainly does. All throughout the New Testament, the idea of fire is used for Gehenna or hell. Matthew chapter 18, verse 9 is one example of that, one of many examples of that. Where Jesus said, if your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out and cast it from you. It is better for you to enter into life with one eye rather than having two eyes to be cast into hell fire. Now, I think we get the context there. He talks about the idea of entering into life, you know, with one eye is kind of the illustration. Better to do away with sin, and he's not talking about literally plucking out one's eye, although I guess someone could take it literally. But the idea is casting something from your life that you might feel is critical to you, important to you, necessary to you, casting that from your life because it is sin, repenting of such a sin, and taking that loss in order to enter into life, then to have kept that and have not lost it in this life and be cast into hell. But he uses the idea of hell fire. So the Bible does illustrate hell as a place of fire. And not just any fire, but in eternal fire or in everlasting fire. If you notice in Matthew 25 and verse 41, it says of the Lord, then he will say to those on the left hand, depart from me, you cursed, into the everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. The everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels is another term that we find in the Bible associated with hell. Now, what does that mean? The everlasting fire. It means it's everlasting fire. That's what I think, anyway. I think you all would probably agree with that as well, that if it says everlasting fire, then it won't end. The fire won't be put out. Now, we have even some brethren, so this isn't just concepts of mainstream religion, but we have brethren who hold to the idea that hell is a temporary place. There's a bit of a percentage of our brethren that have held to that. There was a book published several years ago, and what was it called? It had to do with God's judgments against men and nations. It was written by Homer Haley, and half of the book is excellent and scriptural, and the other half of the book is erroneous. Trying to prove from the scriptures that hell is only a temporary destination, and then the spirit will cease to exist once it has undergone the very temporary punishment. Don't see it in the Bible. I see ideas of everlasting fire, other ideas that we'll talk about soon enough about how the worm will never die, you know, the fire will never cease. Why does Jesus use such terminology if it is a place that will be done in short order? I think there is a grave mistake made when one starts to think that hell is a temporary place. Just some thoughts. I'm sure you can think of some more yourself. But what a false hope this would give to someone who will choose to be disobedient. I mean, think about the idea, you know, of the gospel being proclaimed and saying to the disobedient, saying to the unrepentative, if you don't repent, you're going to go to hell. Now, hold on now. Now, when you go to hell, it's just going to be for a little while. And, have you been pretty good person? Well, then it would be quite short. It's going to be painful. It's going to be really painful, maybe, but it's not going to last. It's not going to last. And it seems like these folks have taken the concept of hell and have made it more of like someone's decision to have a surgery done or something. You know, they're sitting there thinking of the pros and cons of having a surgery done. And if I do it, it's going to be painful. They're going to put me under. I'm going to have to recover for a time, you know. But then, hopefully things like my quality of life will be better after that. Or something like that. It's not in the Bible. It can't be found in the Bible. It's just not so. And we can't give folks a hope that it just be for a time. When Jesus says it is eternal, it is an everlasting fire. Notice what he says in Mark 9, verse 43 and 44. He says, if your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. It is better for you to enter into life maimed rather than having two hands to go to hell, into the fire that shall never be quenched, where their worm does not die and the fire is not quenched. See that? Notice what he said. The idea of going to hell, he says, into the fire that shall never be quenched. The worm doesn't die. That to me suggests that the worm will always have something to feed on, is the illustration. Because these folks will always be there. I mean, if they all dissolve and cease entirely, then what is this idea of the worm not dying? Wouldn't he cease too? You know, what's the purpose and the idea of a worm? So, there's a lot of issues with this, but we can make some more arguments, but I think we'll leave it at that. But if you're unsure about this idea of whether it's eternal or temporary, then, you know, we can talk some more and we can look at some other scriptures. But I think for just this lesson, that those things are going to be more or less sufficient. In Matthew 22, verse 13, hell is also described as a place of outer darkness and a place of weeping and gnashing of teeth. Where Jesus says in Matthew 22, 13, and the king said to his servants, bind him hand and foot, take him away, cast him into outer darkness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And so we have this idea of this outer darkness, this complete darkness, this idea of weeping. Weeping over what? Well, I guess there'd be a lot to weep over. I guess there'd be a lot of regrets. But also, as he says, weeping and gnashing of teeth. The idea of the gnashing here is referring to the clenching, the grinding of the teeth. You know, when folks are in extraordinary pain, you know, they clamp down, you know, with their jaw. And that's the terminology that Jesus is using there, is that they just have clamped that jaw down in an absolute agony. And so that might also have an effect on the weeping. But certainly I think there will be a lot of feelings of regret that would cause weeping just the same. Now, look at this idea. Jesus has just described a place of outer darkness, but he's also described a place of eternal fire. Now, fire is light, and outer darkness is dark. So are we talking about two different places? Are we talking about the Lord being inconsistent or speaking contrary? Well, I don't think he is speaking contrary, and I don't think he's talking about two different places. I think he's talking about the same place. And this goes back to the idea that hell is a spiritual place. And Jesus uses different illustrations, pictures, to describe what it's like, because you and I have no idea what a spiritual place really is like. We've never seen a spiritual place. And so to describe it as everlasting fire, well, we get the idea. To describe it as outer darkness, we get the idea. But physically speaking, there will be no fire. There will be no outer darkness. These are physical illustrations to paint an image, a picture, an idea about what this place would be like. And so we never have a glimpse in the Bible into hell and have an understanding of what it will look like. We only have these illustrations to help us understand a little bit of what it will feel like. And that's why Christ is consistent and harmonious by saying it's a place of eternal fire, and by saying it's a place of outer darkness. And which, by the way, the idea of darkness is related also throughout the Bible, old and new, of a judgment. Judgment against sin. Justice against sin. This is a place of justice. You think of fire. We talked about fire and brimstone being terminology for local geographical judgments of God against sin. But fire is used throughout, referring to all kinds of means of judgment and God's justice. Doesn't the end of Hebrews chapter 12 talk about how we ought to fear God? He says, for our God is a consuming fire. He's a God of justice against sin, and we need to fear Him. He's a God of judgment against evil, so we need to fear Him. So a lot of this goes so many different ways. Not only does fire and darkness and weeping and gnashing of teeth all show us these different feelings of agony, but they also have some symbolism of this is a place of God's justice. Darkness. Whether it was Babylon and the light, God talked about how the lights would be taken out of the way, the sun, the moon, and the stars not giving light, that there would be darkness. He used that kind of language in the Old Testament of Babylon, of Edom, of Egypt, of Jerusalem of old, of Jerusalem of the first century. Jesus used that terminology in Matthew chapter 24 of the idea of darkness on a geographical location, and that was judgment and God's justice being shown against sin and evil. So there's a lot of things here to contemplate when it comes to these images that Jesus paints of this place we call hell. But I think the Bible presents us with some proof that this is not a physical place of fire or physical darkness. Matthew 10, verse 28, Jesus said, do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul, but rather fear Him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. Now think about that for a second. He talked about, don't fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. That's man. They can kill the physical. They can kill the physical body. They can put to agony the physical body, but they can't touch the soul, but God can touch the soul. And He can touch it in hell. Man can punish the physical body, but you see here that hell is a place, according to Jesus, hell is a place that is going to affect the soul. He uses the term destroy the soul. Now that's not a point in the hat of an individual who thinks this is a temporary place. That's not a point to say that destroy would mean that they would actually disappear in short order and just vanish and no longer be in pain or anything like that. And by the way, one of these issues with this temporary place of hell is these folks are fighting against this idea of eternal fire. But they don't want to touch the idea of eternal reward. See, Jesus uses the same words for heaven and hell. Eternal. You say that hell's eternal. We have folks say, no, that's not. Can't be. But they'll agree when Jesus says that heaven is eternal. They say, yeah, that just keeps on going. Anyway, that was a bit of a tangent. No, but we see here in this word destroy, which I think Luke can clear up our minds a little bit, chapter 12, verse 5, of parallel text. He says, I'll show you whom you should fear. Fear him who, after he has killed, has power to cast into hell. Yes, I say to you, fear him. Notice that. After he has killed. After he's taken away the physical, the body, physical. He says he will cast into hell. So it's a spiritual place. And I think we would all agree, everyone in this room would agree on that. But this is biblical confirmation that this is a place that is not going to have these physical entities of fire and things that we can see here in the physical realm. It's just further confirmation that these are ideas that present us with an idea of what this place is and what this place will be like. It is a place of justice. It is a place of judgment. It is a place of punishment. And just as there is an eternal reward that is just, there is also an eternal punishment that is just. And I think the same could be said of hell as the reference to heaven when Jesus said in Luke 20, verse 34, "The sons of this age marry and are given in marriage, but those who are counted worthy to attain that age and the resurrection from the dead neither marry nor are given in marriage, nor can they die anymore, but they are equal to the angels and are sons of God, being sons of the resurrection." Again, this is a text in application to heaven, but we see that this age is shed, this body is shed, and the ways of this age is shed. I would say that the same could be said of hell, that the physical is done away with entirely, and the spirit remains. And so it is going to be that spiritual realm. And so these are at least some of the things that the Bible addresses on the subject of a place of punishment against sin. Whatever the case is, I hope that this lesson will help us to make better choices in our life. This is an eternal punishment. We have a lot on the line here, and we have a short few years in this life to make the proper choices. Just as Jesus said, if it's your eye, if it's your arm, your leg, if that causes you to sin, pluck it out, cut it off, cast it away. Whatever is so important to you in this life that you're holding on to, and it's keeping you from being obedient to Jesus Christ, rip it away from you. Cast it away. It's better for you to have that cast from you, to not have to have lived with it in this life, and be able to live and enter into life, than to have had it for these few short years and enter into hellfire. If you're subject to the gospel's invitation unto salvation this evening, we invite you to come forward and let us know while together.